From the Vaults, audio from Edmonton's past.
This cassette recording from the Voices of Old Strathcona Project is an interview of Mae Dornan on May 20th, 1992, and was digitized in May 2022.
This is Joan Odney from the Old Strathcona Foundation talking to Mrs. Mae Dornan at her home in Edmonton on Thursday, May 20th, 1992. Mrs. Dornan, would you tell me about your parents? Who was your father and where he was born?
My father was Emil Wankel, and he was born in Elmira, Ontario. His father came from Germany around about 1820 or thereabouts. And my mother was born in Elmont, Ontario, of Irish parentage. Her father came from Ireland. Her mother was born in Canada.
Where did they meet and marry?
They met in the States, in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and they spent their honeymoon at Devil's Lake.
And how did they get to Manitoba, I believe?
Yes. My father was a grain elevator operator, and it caused erysipelas. So they moved back to Manitoba. And he took out his Canadian citizenship again. And it was Oak River, Manitoba, a small town northwest of Winnipeg, north of Brandon.
And that's where he was a grain elevator?
No, he went into the hardware business with J.J. Barr. And they had a hardware in Oak River. And that hardware, especially interesting, was they kept the coffins up in the upper part of the building. And my mother used to make the linings whenever there was a funeral.
Did she really? Yes. And were the coffins made there?
Yes, they were.
They made the coffins, and your mother did the.
Quite ordinary in those days. They weren't
right.
like yes. they are today.
Yes. And is that where you were born?
That's where I was born. My brother was born in Bean Siding, North Dakota. And he was 8 months old when they came up, and then I was born. My brother had a very wonderful memory. He remembers the day I was born when he was two. He and my father went walking that on the Sunday, the day before I was born.
And what year was that?
That was 1904. No, I was born in 1904.
1904, right.
It was corroborated, of course, by my father.
Right. And why does he remember that day?
I don't know. Well, they were walking along the tracks. He remembers walking along the railway tracks, yet. Mm-hmm. The town was very small. It was in the circle with the elevators in the center. And I went back in about 10 years ago, and I found the town so small, the distance from the elevator to our place. But, of course, it was because when we were young, it looked
short legs.
It looked large.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. So you had one brother.
Yes.
Were there more in the family?
No, there weren't.
No? When did the family move from Manitoba?
Well, my father retired, and he was going out to my mother's brother's in Spokane. He had purchased an orchard, an apple orchard there. But before we came up, we traveled all through the Ontario and saw all our relatives before we went. Then we went to Spokane, and that's where I spent a most wonderful Christmas.
Good.
We were at our aunt's, and we went down in the basement to wait for Santa Claus, and they put me up to the window, and I can swear to this day I saw Santa Claus in the sky with his reindeer. And then we went upstairs, and I got a little trunk, exactly the same as our family trunk, and in it were all my doll's clothes and a new doll. that's all I got. I think my brother got a sleigh or something. Okay. But in those days, you didn't get the things they did today.
That's right. Yes. That's right. So when did you actually come to Strathcona?
Well, my father failed in the apple orchard. He was a grain farmer, and it just didn't go. So he had word from Jack Barr, his former partner, who had come to Edmonton, and they then got together and they formed Wonkel and Barr Hardware on White Avenue.
Do you remember what year that was?
1910.
1910 they moved to Strang.
I think it was July.
Right.
My first night in Edmonton was spent in the Strathcona Hotel.
Do you remember that night?
Oh, yes, definitely. What I remember the station with a row of, I think they were lilacs, and a little bit of a park, which nobody ever used, was encased.
Beside
the railway track, yes.
Do you remember the hotel?
Oh, yes, I do.
What do you remember about
the hotel? Just looking out the window and seeing things.
Right.
We were right at the front because I saw White Avenue, yes.
And where exactly was the hardware store?
It was in the old Ross building, which was the oldest brick building on White Avenue.
Can you take us on a walk through the store? What sort of things
were
in the store?
I have a picture of the store. We've got an interior, one exterior to your picture. It wasn't, just typical.
What sort of things, though? Did you have appliances or small
hardware? No, there wouldn't be much appliances. Small hardware, of course. They catered to the farmers in the south of Edmonton, South Edmonton. And one thing they did, a lot of them were Germans, and my father knew a little bit of High German. They said it was High German. I never knew about it. And they called him Mr. Winkelbach. And they wanted to have him rather than Jack because they could at least talk to him.
What do you mean by High German?
Well, there's Low German and High German. I don't know anything about it except that they're just a little bit of a dialect. Probably the real English and then the dialects or something.
Right, yes. Okay, yes. So from the hotel, where did you move to? Where was your home?
My father rented a house on 103rd Street, about 87th Avenue. It was right next to the Armories, which was being built at the time.
Was that two-story?
Yes, a two-story, small, a little narrow house.
Is it still there?
No. But it's not too long ago since they took it down. And then we moved to the house on White Avenue and 199th Street. It was a brick, two-story.
Do you remember the number?
I don't remember the number.
And is it still there?
No, there's a shopping center there now.
Right, yes.
Right.
What do you remember about those houses? Did you have chores to do?
I just remember playing with our friends. In the house on White Avenue, my mother thought we should have some kind of she wanted us to have a well-rounded education, I guess, so she had a woman come and give us painting lessons, my brother and I. Mrs. Crammond was her name, and she also took another pupil who was Arden Matart, one of the famous Matarts, and she gave us, I was between 6 and 7, and I have a pansy at the present moment that doesn't look too bad.
That's great, yes. Mm-hmm. And what other things did you do?
Then there was, we always had games all over town because it wasn't quite like it is today. Children could wander around with, not complete safety, but almost. And we had Run Sheep Run, and lots of games that took us over most of the
Lots of neighborhood children?
Lots of neighborhood children. And then we had Dr. Hodson, who was our family doctor. He lived on 102nd Street off White Avenue. And I did babysitting when I was probably seven. And the names of the babies were...
Would you give me that name again? Hodson?
Hodson. H-O-T-S-O-N.
Okay.
He was one of the...
Family doctor,
yes. Mm-hmm. And I babysat for a little baby called Brock. The family's name was Brock. And Downs. Downs lived on 102nd. Mm-hmm. And quite a long ways. They trusted me. As a matter of fact, one time on White Avenue, Aurora Dame, who lived next to us and was quite a bit older than I, she tried to take the baby from me, teasing me, of course. But I was fighting like mad, and my father came along, and he couldn't get over it. He said they couldn't take that baby from her for anything. That was in those days, really. Couldn't do that today.
Where did you go to school?
St. Anthony's School. And on the way sometimes, well, this was a little later on, I used to take a drink out of the fountain. The McIntyre fountain, yes. And then the library opened, and I took
where
my...
Where was that?
Track on the
where
library.
Where it is now?
Where it is now, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I took my first book out of it. It was called Peter Rabbit.
Remembering that.
I do remember it, and I went down to the 75th anniversary, and I told them that story. I remember everything about that. We went down in the basement for the storytelling. Mm-hmm. That was it.
Right. Yes. And after St. Anthony's, where did you go?
Well,
that was
you mean for school?
Grade 7, 8, somewhere in there.
Oh, you mean for school?
For school.
Well, I went to St. Anthony's on 76th Street, which was a frame, two-story frame building, four rooms. And grade 1 and 2 were at the old St. Anthony's on 84th Avenue.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
By the way, I want to say that 84th Avenue was called Lumsden Avenue to begin with, and then when we moved first in 1912, it was 138 Second Avenue Northwest, and when we amalgamated with Edmonton, it became 10522 84th Avenue.
Yes. Right. Thank you. And then you went on to a school on the north side?
Oh, yes. I went for high school to 3rd Street Separate High School on 103rd Street. And we took the streetcar four times a day because we couldn't take our lunches. We came home for the hour and a half.
How long did that take?
Well, an hour and a half.
You know, to come home.
For noon.
Yes.
Oh, well, from 3rd Street, just about the same as a bus would come now. Like,
I see.
We came over the high bridge.
The high-level bridge, yes.
It was the high-level bridge was in 1930.
That's right, it was, yes.
Yeah. Yes. My teacher is still alive at 100. She's in Canterbury Court. And she
that?
Has, in Canterbury Court.
Who is that?
Miss Morey, M-O-R-E-T. She taught us in high school, and there are quite a few out there who were her pupils.
What subjects did she teach?
She taught math. She was very famous for that.
And she's still alive today?
Yes, and going concern. Comes down for her meals.
Everything. Thank you. What other schooling did you have after that?
I went to normal school, and in the only year it was in Edmonton at Highlands. There we took the streetcar again, but only twice a day. Only twice a day.
Right. And normal school was how long?
8 months. Then we went.
And then you went teaching?
Uh-huh. Went teaching in September.
So how old were you when you started teaching?
Well, I was 17, but Yeah, 17, I guess. And I had a school at Vegreville. I was there a year and a half. Lots of experiences, of course.
Do you remember what you got paid that first year?
Oh, yes, we got paid well, $1,000 a year, barring the 2-3 months that you didn't get anything. That is, yes, 8 months.
So
they counted that.
You lived out there?
Oh, yes. But my friend, May Bedard, took a school 4 miles east, I think, of Vegreville, and I was south. But we spent I'd spend a weekend with her, she'd spend a weekend with me, and the third weekend we'd come to Edmonton. And we had a great time. And once in a while, if we had anything going on, my father would get up, we'd get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and he'd take us out to Vegreville, which would be a couple of hours, not today, not like a day today.
Right.
Yeah.
Was teaching a respected profession for a girl?
Oh, yes.
Your children respected you?
The ones, I'll tell you, they all did, of course, but and the country's pupils, of course, were really much easier. They appreciated everything you did for them, you know. While in the city, well, of course, I had a school. I taught grade 3 and 4 at Mount Carmel. And they were mostly immigrant children of immigrants, you know, from Eastern Europe. There were a lot of them. And they never did know their father's name or to give you statistics. And you'd ask them what their father's name was. They didn't know. What did your mother call your father? Daddy, you know, that kind of thing. And one time I asked them where they were born. Well, most of them could tell you, Edmonton or wherever. One little fellow came up to me, and he was cute as could be. He whispered in my ear, "Please, I think it was in a shack down by the tracks."
Right, yes.
A little bit of humor.
Now, that's two schools. Did you have other schools that you taught in?
I taught in St. Albert for 2 months. I subbed there in the little old school. Almost, well, it wasn't the original, but the one on the hill. And that's all. Okay. Then I took a course in sonography with Catherine Kerrigan. We went to night school for 2 months, and then we went to day school for a couple of months, and then we quit and got our jobs. She eventually went to the States and made a great success of herself, but I stayed here. But I did get a good job with the post office, one of the better civil servants. I worked in the Dominion Lands for a while, too.
In the post office, you worked in the district superintendent's office?
Mr. Leger.
Thank you.
Mr. Leger was the first one. He died, and then Mr. Hale took over.
Right. Yes. And what years was that?
Well, that would be 27, 28, 29.
Right. Yes.
Somewhere around there.
Now, you were May Wonko.
Yes.
And now you're Mrs. May Dornan. So
right.
Somewhere you met your husband.
Well, first of all, I want to tell you about my names. I was a preemie, and I guess I was supposed to be called Alice. And I came in May, so my father went out and promptly registered me as May. My mother took me to Brandon to be baptized, and it was Mary, which she thought was the, you know, thought May was a diminutive of Mary. And then when I went to school, the teacher in grade 1 said, "There are too many Marys. I'm confused. Who has another name?" Up went my hand, and I said, "Mamie." We had a friend called Mamie Haggerty, and I liked her, and that was it. And it stuck with me. All my oldest friends called me Mamie, and my family called me May, and the general public called me Mary.
Isn't that interesting? So you're really divided personality. It hasn't bothered you, though.
No.
No.
I still get Mamie from all my old friends.
Right. Now would you like to tell us about meeting your husband?
Well, I met his brother first, and one day we belonged to a...
What was the brother's name?
Jack. Jack Dornan. Right. And we had the racket club, which was a tennis club, and Jack was there, and I hadn't met Ed yet, but they were having an oratorical contest or a whatever at Sacred Heart down in the basement there, because there were three tennis clubs in the one at St. Joseph's called the Tri-Muse Club, and one at Sacred Heart called the Heart Club, one at St. Alphonsus called the St. Al's, and ours was called the, what were we called? It was called the Raquette Club, and we had contests between us. Well, this was a debate, and Jack told me that his brother was going to be one of the participants along with Jack McLean. And they were against Hugh John McDonald, who later became a judge, and Catherine McGrath, who was known as a orator. And I said, oh, couldn't we get any better than that? However, I went to the debate, and Jack and Ed won. And of course, I thought that was great, and I saw him up there, and that was it.
So
that was it. So that his name was Edward. And then my brother took me to the McDonald Hotel to my first dance. I went with him and his girlfriend, and I came home with Ed.
Right.
That was it. Yeah.
Right. And what year was that?
About, what would it be, 22 or 23.
And what year were you married?
I'm 33. So we both went our separate ways for a while. Well, we were correspondent and everything, but I went traveling, he went way down east, and I went west. And
so how did you get back to
Well,
Edmonton?
We did, but came back to Edmonton, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Married in St. Anthony's Church.
And where did you live after you married?
We lived on Stony Plain Road. Upstairs in a house.
Did you work after marrying?
Oh, yes, I did a lot.
Was that usual?
Well, no, not really.
A lot of women?
A lot of women worked, though.
Did
yeah.
they?
Yeah, I went back to the post office, as a matter of fact, and worked there. I worked there quite a long time. And in the...
Was that still in the district?
And in the Department of Agriculture, in the small greens, and was Mr. Wilson was the manager there.
And did you eventually have a family?
I had three boys. I had Dennis in 1935, Paul in 1938, and Jerry in 1939. Paul died in 1976. It's his family that I have a family. The other two are not married. I have three grandchildren.
They're delightful.
Yes.
Don't all grandmothers think?
Well, my granddaughter is to be married on the 22nd of August, and it's going to be a big affair.
So what did you do in your spare time? What sort of sports and things have you been interested in?
Of course, I wasn't too bad in tennis. We had a lot of tennis clubs, you
did
know.
Did you belong to a tennis club?
Yes, to the Raquette Club, you know.
Right.
And we were pretty good. We had the Carrigans in it, you know, and they were quite champions. And
The Carrington?
Carrigan.
Carrigans?
They lived right next door to me.
Uh-huh.
On 84th Avenue.
Uh-huh.
And curling was my particular thing. I never lawn bowled, or I never alley bowled very well. I was not very good at it, but I lawn bowled, which was really just about like curling. So I was skip at the I curled at the Granite. I became a captain, and the reason for that was odd, because my father had shares in the Granite Club way back when, and I got to be a skip. And my one really crowning thing was to beat Hattie Manley. I beat her on my last rock, and it was a real humdinger.
tell me about the Granite Club.
I want to tell you one thing about the Granite. I went into a bonspiel with Jerry Patterson. She was our skip, and she was a very hard person to, I mean, she wanted you to be perfect. So anyhow, we won our first one, and it was against we played against the Jameson Rink, who had always been tops, and we beat them. And comes a great big headline in the journal. Jameson beaten by unknown rink.
And you were known very well, weren't you?
We never were.
Right. Yes. Was there just curling at the Granite Club?
Yes, just curling.
Just curling?
But they had all kinds of it. They had individual, where you did your own business. You had 10, 20 rocks to throw for different things. And I kind of excelled at that. But one time my son called for me one evening, and he overheard Mrs. Rose, who was always at the Granite. She said, "Darnin isn't as good as she used to be." And my son just, he could... couldn't get out of there quick enough.
Really?
He was so mortified. It didn't bother me any.
That was not. What other sports were you into?
Lawn bowling.
Yeah.
I was pretty good at lawn bowling, too. We had a lot of good times
and
at the Lugarno.
Did you have leagues then?
Yeah, all kinds of them. There was the Lugarno, and we played at a number of them. We played over at the apartment buildings, and down on 104th Street, I don't know the names of them, and all kinds of them, right? We did a lot of it.
How many times would you play a week?
Oh, I wasn't doing anything at the time, so I guess I did about three times a week, probably.
Really?
Yeah. Curling would be about four times a week.
Oh, so you really were a sports
Yes, I know,
woman.
I was, yes.
Yes. What about summertime? You did lawn bowling.
Well, we went down to the Southside pool quite a lot, and I didn't learn to swim. Mr. Crockett was he was giving lessons down there, and I went once, and then I don't know what happened. So I never learned to do the crawl, but I could do the side stroke very well, and I kept myself.
That's swimming.
Okay, yes, yes.
Yes. What about picnicking? Did you used to go on picnics?
Way back in 1912, Gaynors lived in the next 83rd Avenue, and Jack Connolly lived next to us, and he had an agency, the Oldsmobile Agency, and he had a car. Gaynors had a car. We had a car. So we went out to Lake Wabamun. But it would take us at least 2 hours to go there. And we had a picnic there, all the Gaynors and all. And then Bard's often came into that too, you know.
What was that name?
Famous Bard House.
Oh, yes.
By the way, our house was built the same time, and so was Kerrigan's. And I would kind of like to describe my house.
Please do.
Can I?
Yes, give the address first.
10522 84th Avenue. Mm-hmm. And the phone number was 3383 to begin with, and then it got 832 3383. And It had a beautiful oak door. It had a veranda.
Right.
And on it was the swing. And my father used to sit there peeling apples. He'd core them and put it on the end of his jackknife and hand it to each of the kids as he'd do it. And he'd have a whole slew of kids around there listening to his tales. It was ideal. And they were scrambling all over this swing. It was great. Anyhow, inside the door was a big hallway, quite a large one, like a room. The woodwork was very odd. It was black, shiny black. And there was a closet there with a full-length mirror and a window. It was just like a room. And we had a seat that we called a teat, which is a tete-tete. But we didn't know the difference when we were kids.
No.
So, and then we went into the living room. It was also all the... It was all done in black, and it, my mother had a
room. Was this black, like an ebony wood
yes,
you're talking?
Yes, but it was shiny.
Right.
And the walls were terracotta, which made it...
This is the continuation of Joan Ivey interviewing Mrs. Mae Dornan. Sorry, we were interrupted. You were talking about the drapes and...
Yes, the drapes were dark as well. Of course, they had the other... drapes too, and but it didn't seem dark. There was a window there, and the piano was under it, called a piano window. Lots of people had them, and there was no.
And you played the piano?
Oh yes, I played the piano. I got my degree.
Who was your first teacher?
Oh, I have to come to her. Miss Hyam was a famous Southside teacher, but most people didn't like her because she was a real. But I liked her all right because I got along okay. I mean, it was easy for me. She had a recital in the Richards Block one time when I was six.
Which was where?
Richards Block on White Avenue.
Yeah, thank you.
And maybe 15 parents were there. Anyhow, I played two hymns.
Right, yeah.
Anyhow, Miss Hoyam, yes, she was my last teacher too. She and I played a two piano piece at the Women's Musical Club once. That was later on, but we kept along all together, you know. And what else were we talking about? The house, eh? Piano. My father had two pianos in the house one time. We had bought a new one and hadn't sold the other one. And my mother played the piano, and he said he never could tell which one of us was playing.
That's quite a compliment.
And of course,
yes.
You know, to him.
Yes.
The dining room, or the living room, first of all, had one of those lights.
A bay window?
No, the lights.
A chandelier.
Well, a chandelier. But it was, what do you call it? We had a Tiffany lamp in the living room, which was quite
the dining room?
In the living room, this one. And I remember Greta Bard telling me when the house was kind of for sale, she said, you ought to go down and get that because that's valuable. But I never did, and it was gone
right.
The next time
yes.
We went down.
Yes.
In the dining room, we had one hanging, yes. And the dining room had a bay window with three drawers in the bottom where all the linen was kept and everything. But in that, it had a big seat and a bay window. And the walls had a shelf right around. I don't know what you call it.
Plate shelf.
Plate shelf. My mother had beautiful plates.
Okay.
And I don't know why I can't think of these things. Then we had a swinging door to the kitchen, and off the kitchen was the pantry. There was a big kitchen, and the pantry was fairly big, and it had bins for high. For sugar and for flour, and it was quite modern that time. And the kitchen was large. We first of all had a ice box, and the ice man came every so often. But then we got a refrigerator, finally. We had an old stove that my father converted into a gas when the gas came in, and also the furnace. And then we got the gas stove.
Guess he was pretty handy.
Yes. And then there was the den where everybody lived. And it was a nice warm. It had a fireplace, but we never could use it until we got gas and put a radiant in it. And it was comfortable. We had the furniture was all oak with leather, and no wall-to-wall, but scatter rugs all over. The floors were quite good, nice. And we had a little library there. Going up the stairs was quite nice. It had a big post at the bottom. And we had two windows at the top of the first half flight that opened out. It was nice and airy. And then we went up again to the upstairs, and it had four bedrooms to begin with. And then my father had an extra one made. We had an outdoor bedroom, a porch, and it had an awning that came down, and you could sleep out there.
Oh,
and just
lovely.
Like here,
yes.
You could see the stars and everything. It was great.
So this was a fairly large home.
Yeah, five bedrooms finally.
Yes.
And they were all of different colors. Mine was blue, my parents was mauve. There was a beautiful yellow one that I've always admired. It was the brightest room in the house. My brother had fawn color or something like that. And then, of course, there was the other one.
And how many bathrooms in this large?
Just one.
Just
and a great big bathroom, and the bathtub had legs on it. And I remember one time my boy went in there. He was going to the dentist, and I told him to get really cleaned up, you know. So I went in, and there it was just filled with the suds. He said, I used Rinso because it gives the whitest to wash.
He also thought he would come out clean.
Yeah, he was great for that. Well, I got lots of tales about him. Now,
you lived through some very momentous times in Alberta history. Were you or your mother and father interested in politics?
We always. I never missed a voting. Never. Mm-hmm. No, we were always interested. We were actually, I think we were liberals. I was anyhow. I at one time.
Do you remember the times of Nellie McClung and Emily Murphy?
Yes,
and,
I do.
Did you go to any of their meetings?
I never went to them because I was a bit young. But Mrs. Dennis O'Brien was a great friend of Emily Murphy's. And I knew her, and through her I heard all about these, what she was doing, you know. And I was interested, surely. And all the others, there was Parlby and...
Were young women politically active?
Rather. I belonged to the Catholic Business Girls Club, which was an offspring of the Catholic Women's League.
Right.
And we did. We were politically interested in things that pertained to us, mostly. But it was money-making business, of course, but we had lots of fun with... Oh, we used to have our dances at the McDonald, and we'd decorate that room up till it looked like a fairyland.
You say you belong to that, so I assume church had an important part in your life?
Oh, yes.
Yes?
Yes.
As a
child? I've got my 60-year pin from the Catholic Women's League.
And so as a child, it was important
yes,
to you?
Yes, it was. My mother was. And I took my mother. I drove the car when I was 17 to her. You didn't have to have a license. Well, we drove across Canada, and I helped. And... she used to go to collect the fee, which was 25 cents, perhaps 50 cents that later. Now it's $12.
Yes.
And she visited every person, personally. You know, not to just take a membership, but she knew them all. And she helped a lot of people. great many people. Yeah. I used to go on there a lot. Yeah. And
that church was in Strathcona?
St. Anthony's.
St. Anthony's.
The old church. I've got pictures of it here.
Yes. Would you like to talk to us about the scrapbooks and the photograph albums that you have? When did you start doing them, and was it just an interest of you?
I started, the scrapbook came about this way. St. Anthony's had a little booklet. Somebody had done it. It was very, very good, but it was nearly all on the hierarchy. You know, the ordinary people were mentioned and things were mentioned a little bit, but some people thought that should be. So Sister Anne asked me to write something. Now, she didn't specifically say what or anything, but something about the people. So I conceived these things. And I thought when I started it, I'll start from the very, very, very beginning.
Which was?
Which was way back in the fort, actually.
Right.
And I think I have one piece in there that nobody seems to know, but I don't know whether it is true or not. Well, I worked in the archives, the city archives. I volunteered there. I'm still in contact with them. And
so you had some idea of what should go into
this? Well, that's that was the idea. You know, the latest one that is out is that calendar. You got the calendar, did you, of Bruce Ibsen?
Yeah.
Well, it's wonderful. It has a lot of Strathcona in it, too, as well. And
So what year did you start doing this scrapbook?
Oh, it took me at least three years to do it, and I'm still doing it because I have the epilogue there. You know, what's happening today to the people?
I'd like to go back and talk to you for just a few minutes about your ethnic background. Your father had a special name in the German community, which you said was Mr. Winkle?
Winkelbar,
yes.
Or Winkelbar, I think
right.
They called him.
Do you know why he got that name?
Because it was Wankel and Bar,
right.
But they didn't, that was the way they said it.
Right.
And they called him Winkelbar.
And did he play a big part in the German community?
Not very, no.
No.
He didn't really. It was just with that,
a
business
large,
way.
How large the German community on the south side was?
Oh, it was quite large. You know, south of here were a lot of Germans.
And did they have their own parties? And
well, they were on farms, mostly.
I see. Right.
Yeah.
Yes. You have this wonderful scrapbook which you have put together. Now, would you like to look through it and tell us some of the things that you have recorded in this scrapbook? I know it starts back in 1895, but maybe we could start up a little later.
Well,
and tell us what year you're going to start at.
Well, the book is actually has something to do with St. Anthony's Church, but the people in it and the anecdotes that went along with it. It had nothing whatever to do with the hierarchy. And I've got one here of games we played in 1910. It was written mostly by Rose Pollard, who is in California right now. In the spring of 1910, the games played by boys and girls may bring back memories of younger days to some, and to others they may seem different. School games varied from those played during vacation time. And she goes on to name some of them. Hide and seek, run cheap, run, kick the can, or anti-anti eye over. Do you remember?
I don't remember that one. Do you remember what that was?
Oh, yes, this was 1910.
How did you play that?
What, anti-anti eye over? You threw it over the building, you know. You say anti-anti eye over and beat the other guy that could be on the other side of the building.
Right, yes.
I sometimes wonder, she said, what kind of games little girls play nowadays, that is, when they are not watching television. They played nothing. They were all ladylike sort of things, you know. The things they played. We had a showbiz circus 1913. It was a St. Patrick's concert put on in the old Strathcona High School in 1913, and it's written by Rose Pollard. And I thought it was, but it's too long really to read. But one little thing in it was this. Concerts were held in the evening of the 17th, and they'd have an opening chorus, a piano duet, or a flag drill. Do you remember? They were dark knee, the boys had dark kneed pants, white shirts, and Kelly green ties. And then they had a little play called The Jewels, and all the big little girls had tissue paper dresses in all the different colors. And I think mine was emerald. And then one comic or tragic incident took place, depending on who looks at it. The Jewels was a fantasy in which jewels assumed animated personalities. There was King Diamond, Prince Emerald, Princess Sapphire. The precious stones were the royal family. Semi-precious stones were the nobility, and ordinary stones were merely peasants. I was a mere agate, a member of the chorus line, as was my sister Kathy. The star of the production was the fairy princess dressed in white with wand. Mae Bedard was chosen for this part. Our costumes were made of crepe paper in jewel colors appropriate to the characters. The paper was sewn to a foundation of flour sack and lavishly trimmed with tinsel. Our mothers and other members of the parish ladies' aid made the costumes. We were instructed to meet backstage half an hour before the concert was to begin. Miss Marquis, the accompanist, was delayed for some reason, so one little jewel sat down awkwardly. When Miss Marquis finally arrived, breathless, we quickly filed on stage, but horrors, the little jewel who had sat down found that the strain on the fragile paper caused it to tear across the seat, thus exposing for all to see the flour sack foundation, on which clearly showed in bold letters the legend gold medal.
Do you have another one for us now?
Okay. City of Edmonton was the steamer that went down the Saskatchewan River. And the three Catholic schools, Grandin, Sacred Heart, and St. Anthony's, all went on a picnic down to
what would it be, like,
it was
around Sherwood Park?
I've got it somewhere. Oh, well. Down the river, anyhow, to Forest Heights, not Forest Heights, but near there. And we all had it was towards the end of the school year, and they decided to go down on the steamer, and it was in 1911, the last days of school. And they boarded the City of Edmonton for a picnic to Clover Bar, that's it. And about 12 miles east on the river. The students wore their school colors. We had gold and white, and Grandin had green and white, and Sacred Heart had blue and white, and that helped the teachers to sort out some identification for the teachers also. Mm-hmm. We had a picnic on the hill, and we had all kinds of sports. And I do remember picking wild strawberries. They were just thick. Mm-hmm. And then we arrived home in the early evening. We agreed it was a fine day that we had. Mm-hmm. That was down the river. On the city of Edmonton.
And was that normal to have schools together?
Yes, the city of Edmonton, they used to go up to Big Island, you know, mm-hmm. regularly and have dances and all the rest of it on the boat. So the river was used far more than it is today.
Hopefully we're going to use it
again, yes. Uh-huh. Right. Yeah, you can have a lovely day going up. And then they dance to somebody's band.
On the boat? On the boat.
Matter of fact, I have the name of the person, but I just can't see it here.
These are wonderful pictures that you have in this scrapbook, and whoever gets this is going to treasure it very
much. I think they are, but do you know what?
Go ahead.
They don't think much of it down at the church. I don't think anybody's read it. I sent them a copy. This is the original.
Right.
And you know, a copy would cost like the dickens to have these all go through the...
That's right. Yes.
Cost me a lot.
Yes. Well,
but it's
they
worth
may
it
not
me.
Now, but they will in time.
They will, I guess, they maybe. Will. Yes. They don't seem to be oriented that way. The young people today, or at least people today, don't go for history much.
Oh, there's a lot of
some of them do.
Yes,
I think there's some.
Do. Would you like to just tell us another of the incidents in there?
In here. Mm. Yeah, well, there's Muchias, you know.
What is
Muchias,
that?
Muchias, he was christened Matthias Collin and John Collins by HR, the Hudson Bay Company officials. He was Little Henry by John Walter and Muchias, Big Head in Cree. He was a... not a midget, a
dwarf.
Yeah. He had a powerful body and large head and long
you
arms.
You do mean a midget, I think.
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean a...
He was just small in stature.
Small in stature, yes, but heavy. Yeah. Short legs, big head, powerful. He even rescued children from drowning in the Saskatchewan River one time. And he also won a bet by carrying a 98-pound bag of flour without stopping to rest to Edmonton from Fort Saskatchewan. Okay. And he was seen in St. Anthony's Church every Sunday and Holy Day, dressed in the buckskin jacket and a Mountie hat. He always wore the Mountie hat.
And he lived in Strathcona?
He lived in... He was down in Walter's Flats. He was Walter's right-hand man. Oh. And I have a very nice tribute to him by Rose Pollard, who knew him, and she really liked him. And that's right here.
Right.
But it's too long to...
Right, yes.
But very good. She said he built a small log house in the riverbank directly across the road from the Walter residence. Furniture inside was handmade and to fit his special requirements.
Yes, right, yes. Would you have considered him a character around the church?
Oh, well, it was, yes. A lot of children were afraid of him because of his oddity.
Right.
But I don't remember seeing him going to church. Right. And then there was Dolly Mayall, lived down in Walter's Flats. The Mayall family did. He was the manager of one of Walter's lumber yards, I think. And... Dolly was a very small, dainty person, just about like her name. And she remembers sitting on the lumber pile, watching the progress of the building of the high-level bridge. And she always wanted to, you know, she fantasied having ride on it. So she did, and the first child to ride. So in 1979, when the city celebrations 75 years, she traveled with the mayor across the special streetcar. The last one, I think it was, she traveled with the mayor and everybody. Yeah, she was on the first one.
Do you know who the mayor was at that time?
75? No, it doesn't say here.
All right,
She did now. Well, anyhow, she rode on the first one and she rode on the last one.
Right.
She was.
Do you remember rides on that?
Oh, every four times a day.
Oh, that's
right.
Yes.
Over the
that's
brink,
right.
You know, yes. Just as if we were.
Was it scary to you?
No.
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 Was it?
We got onto that readily because we went so often.
That's
didn't
right.
Bother.
Yes.
But.
I've heard people say that it was scary.
Oh, well, I guess it was. Frank Loughlin was on one that stopped and it kind of tilted a little bit and they all got off. Of course,
it was
built
blown.
So that they could get off onto the
yes.
onto the bridge.
Yes.
And they were mostly going to the buildings for work. So
right.
They just walked on to work.
Right,
it didn't
yes.
bother anybody, yes. But it would scare me.
I think it blew during the wet winds.
Something like
winds.
That, I don't
yes.
know.
Yes, I've heard people talk about it.
And then there was the Pollard's Brickyard, you know.
Yes, and tell us about that.
Well, they had the brickyard down there. They came here, they were going to be gold mining, but they found this seam of clay or whatever it was. So they started this. And they had many buildings in town.
Yes.
The Rutherford House, the
yes.
Holy Trinity Church.
Yes.
The minister went down and picked out the clinker bricks for it. Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yes.
And then
did
there was.
Did you ever go over the brickworks?
The which?
Did you ever go over the brickworks?
No, I never did. That was when I was young.
Right.
Too young. I know the Pollards very well.
Right.
They're still there.
Right.
And then there was the Williams that lived down in the flats in this log house, and their children have come along. Pretty well. I visited one out at, I think it was Saddle Lake or some lake like that, and they had a real nice cottage out there. There were 10 children raised in this place.
You Williams. Really do know the history of
oh, yes.
This,
well, I went to school with the Williamses.
Area very well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, yes. And then there was the flood, and I was on
yes,
the high-level bridge looking down on everything. And my friend was with me, and she had a brand new Panama hat, one with the ribbon around and down the back, you know, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Blew off, went down the river with the flood. That was Maysol.
Do you remember the concern of the community around the time of the flood?
Well, we were up in the...
Yes, I know, but I mean,
no,
do you remember hearing that the radio
oh,
must
well,
have been
yes.
recording?
Oh, well, yes.
Yeah, what sort of things do you remember?
No, I don't really remember no. that. I just remember going onto the bridge.
Right.
Seeing it. It was too far away. Well, not really, I'll tell you. The Pollards had to be evacuated, more or less, from their house, and they had about 7 kids. Mm-hmm. So they took them, and they took them up the hill, and
there were probably only one family. There were many
oh,
more.
Yes, the Dolly Mayall, the one I was just talking about.
Yes.
Yes, their family had to be. In fact, their father lost a number of houses, all except the one they were living in.
Lost the houses?
Yes. Oh, I heard about it at school, you know, of course.
So you do remember things?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
If you just let your memories come.
What was the custom in the early days? For men to keep some diaries, you know, entering the events of the day. Mr. John Fraser, father of Ralph Fraser, kept a diary about the weather and all those things, you know, commodities and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And on one page after the usual entries, in bold red letters, was the notation, daughter born this morning at 3:00. Then he continued with the mundane activities of the day.
Right.
Didn't matter much to him. Now she's living over here. She's the daughter.
Right.
Yeah.
And
they all kept records. You know, Furman Bedard kept a record of the times and dates of the year that the river went out or froze, and his son William kept a diary, recording the growth of his famous vegetable garden. He planted it according to the moon. Harvested. And he also listed the titles of 50 books that he'd read, and the name and the author and his own assessment.
Really?
Yeah, he was a great man.
He didn't list the things that he planted at that time?
Oh, yes.
Did he? Do you
he had wonderful garden.
Yes.
Corn, And he'd plant them according to the moon.
I wondered if he could give our new gardeners.
He could indeed.
Some.
Well, his daughter's living out there. I meet her. I saw her yesterday. Mm-hmm. And then Jack Conley came from Ontario in the early 1890s. He held an Ontario ticket, which meant he could teach. You know, the ticket.
Oh, does that mean he could teach anywhere?
Mm-hmm. It was recognized here for
here.
A time,
yes.
You know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he eventually bought up a property in White Avenue, became quite wealthy.
Yes.
his son was Father Conley. And then, I don't know, weather predictions were, when muskrat houses are too high, winter will be long and severe. Frogs have to be froze up 3 times before spring is here.
This was written when?
Here and there, I don't know.
1913
I guess I got.
Or something?
And Mr. Duggan owned this is known, I guess. He owned a lumber and implement business next to the Windsor Hotel, which was opposite the station.
Mr. Duggan?
Duggan.
Yes. Right.
They're old timers, see?
Right.
I knew them well, too.
These names will all be helpful.
Well, the Ross Hardware was the first brick building in White Avenue in 1897. It was conspicuous by its twin arches. That's what I want to know. It's called the Blue, well, it was the Blue Danube, but something else now. Mr. Wonkel, in partnership with J.J. Barr, had a hardware business in this building in 1910, known as Wonkel and Barr Hardware.
Well,
those are the afternoon tea. That was something. Oh, the people got together, the ladies calling cards. I have all kinds of them. They were the first Wednesday. Then they wouldn't have to phone anybody, but they would be home for anybody to come.
Yes. That was very convenient, I'm sure.
Very, very.
Well, I'm sorry, and I'd love to continue on looking through your scrapbook, but I want to thank you for adding your memories and knowledge to our history project.
This material is a digitized audio recording from the holdings of the City of Edmonton Archives. For more information regarding the recording, please contact us by email at cms.archives@edmonton.ca, by phone at 780-496-8711, or on our online catalog at cityarchives.edmonton.ca.